Welcome to the Pure Athlete Podcast, a show that exists to equip young athletes, parents, and coaches as they journey through their youth sports experience. We sit down with some of your favorite athletes to hear about their most memorable moments, helpful tips, and valuable lessons from their youth sports career. Today's episode features Olympic gold medal softball legend and ESPN analyst Jessica Mendoza. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Pure Athlete. I'm Jeff Francoeur with Brad Williams and Britt Lee here on both my left and right. And we're so excited about today's guest. I've got to know her through some announcing, but grew up, obviously, as I was playing, watching her play too. Was a four-time All-American at Stanford and inducted into the National Softball Hall of Fame in 2019. Jessica Mendoza, thank you for joining us.
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you stopped yourself with, like, I grew up. Like, I was like, no, you didn't grow up watching it. Now I'm going to feel really old.
I got you there. I did. You're right. I did not grow up. I came alongside while we were playing.
Okay, all right.
There we go. But, well, first of all, what are you up to? What are you up to with your two boys and at home in Oregon?
Yeah, well, it's basketball season over here and theater season. Both of my kids are acting and big into theater, so we have a huge play coming up in 2 weeks that'll be in downtown Sound of Music. And then basketball season is underway, so my youngest is built like a football player, so he looks like a football player playing basketball. But that Perfect. Was always actually my favorite sport, was basketball. It's why I wanted to go to Stanford. I wanted to play for Tara Vanderveer. I was a huge Stanford basketball fan. Was 5'9" very early on, and so I was a power forward, and that worked when I was younger, and then everyone else kept going, and I stopped at 5'9", and I was never, you know, had the ability to be a guard. So I was always under the basket, loved it, loved boxing out, throwing elbows, like the physicality that basketball is. But softball was the sport that I always say picked me. That's why I always tell kids to play a ton of sports, because I would have picked basketball early on, done that full time. But ultimately it was softball that was going to really lead me to everything else.
Oh, thank you. Well, you've led us right into what we're digging into here with youth sports. And so I'm going to start off with growing up. I know you played a lot of sports. What was your favorite youth sports memory?
Favorite youth sports memory? Probably playing for my dad. And, you know, I say this now because when I was that age and you're dads, you have daughters, like you feel me, right? You have kids. We battled. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like, did we battle? But some of my gosh. And we just went and moved my parents out of finally the house I grew up in. And you guys, like, my dad was a head baseball coach at a college. So, like, when I say he was our coach, like, it was, like, serious. Like, we had to lift weights before dinner, batting practice every night before, you know, whatever time we could get it in. We didn't have a lot of money. He made, like, literally from, like, PVC pipe and this, like, netting, this, like, you know, basically a backstop so he could pitch to us behind it and we wouldn't kill him, and we would throw it on top of our car and we'd hang out the windows to like hold on to it and then drive down the road. And when we were moving my parents out, I went to that park that we're talking thousands of hours of batting practice and ground balls. And I mean, you know how it is when you're a kid, it just seems like this vast, huge field, and really all it is, it's just tiny little backstop. It's still there, you know, just off one of those awful grass, like growing every which way, and giant potholes. But oh my gosh, the memories of that field with my dad and my sister and him just spending countless hours like batting practice, and we'd rotate, and he would have different colored balls for different pitches. And we're like, I'm not even kidding, like 6 years old, 7 years old, and we're learning how to hit changeups and different locations based on like where the ball was. I mean, he was next level. But that's my favorite memory for sure, is playing for my dad and just those family memories.
Wow. So when did you realize, was it 6 years old, or when did you realize you were pretty good at sports? Like, when did you kind of say, hey, I'm better than my peers, and this is kind of something that I take pride in?
Yeah, Brad, that took some time. I was never super, like, I was never that super athlete, the one that, you know, stood out. From a young age, I needed the help. That's why, you know, I'm so grateful to my dad, because my little sister, like, she was a natural stud, like, smooth hands, just had that ability. I always tell kids, like, I look like Bambi, I had really long, uncontrollable legs, like, was just super uncoordinated. And I would say, honestly, it wasn't until, like, college. I mean, that's what's insane. And wow. That's why, you know, my heart hurts for, like, early commits and, like, all this pressure now to, like, pick where you're going to go to school early, because for me, like, that wasn't an option. I wasn't that good. I had to learn, I had to grow into my body, I had to get stronger, I had to understand my strengths. But I always had the work ethic. And to be honest, Brad, like, I was so blessed to not have right away talent, because it always gave me that humility that I feel like I still have now, where I would call it humility / insecurity, where I was like, am I good enough? Like, I have to get better. Like, I got to go get after it. I got to go run. I got to go, you know, lift weights. I got to go, like, work on hitting that darn low outside pitch that I struggle with. Like, all those things allowed me to, then when the talent did catch up, the work ethic was already there. And it was kind of a perfect meeting of the two, for sure.
So, Jessica, that's really fascinating, because we talk to a lot of very accomplished athletes like yourself on this podcast, and frankly, most of them were the stars from the time they began. So, you know, and that's a lot of kids who are watching this they don't have that story. But I think what I hear from you is, you know, you might say, don't give up hope, that you can still accomplish a lot, even if you're not a star at 8 years old.
No, and I think that's a benefit, to be honest. I'm happy that my kids aren't, you know, even watching them play sports, you know, you want them to have success, I guess, but I'm glad, like, when they fail sometimes, because it gives them immediate humility. Like, remember we were talking about, we need to go practice. Like, I always saw so many of my teammates that were definitely the best athletes, rarely that they put in the extra work. And that to me is a gift that I feel like I had, but I also was blessed with a coach as a father. Even though I would never have called it a blessing growing up. But, you know, I also had someone that consistently could work on my skills and my craft and finally get me to a point. Honestly, as a left-handed hitter, I want to tangent this because, and I don't mean to go totally another direction, but, like, even when we were, like, little kids, like babies, he wanted to figure out what eye we were dominant. So my sister and I, he realized we were right eye dominant. And because he was a switch hitter, he had us hitting from the left side from, like, 2 years old on. Because he always felt like whatever eye was dominant, you want that to be closer to the pitcher. This is, like, the family, to give you some insight.
Love it.
But when I, you know, struggled to really get those levers and figure out, because again, I was just long arms, long limbs, he turned me into a slapper early on, even though he didn't even know that part of the game. But in softball, you had that option. So he just taught me, like, because I had speed, he's like, just put the ball in play. So he had me bunting and just literally slapping those early years just to, like, get my confidence going. And honestly, just hand-eye coordination, a little pepper, right? And then that allowed me, once I became a power hitter, to have, like, both, to be able to do both.
We need to get your dad to give a lesson to the big leagues these days of putting the ball in play.
Yes, that was always number one.
Yes.
You could not strike out.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about, so you said you played basketball. So what was your, you know, little leagues? You did softball, basketball, fill us in on that, kind of.
A lot of soccer. I did travel soccer also. And I loved that sport. My dad hated it though. He was always like, you know, I don't know if that's just an old school baseball thing, but he was always like rarely came to my soccer games. I was like, no, I'm good. He's like, that sport's awful. Like, just always bad mouthed it. But I love soccer too. I was really into snowboarding. I still am. Always wanted to be a pro snowboarder, and it was right when we started to see women snowboarding in the Olympics, and it was something that inspired me, but my parents thought I was going to be a druggie or something if I ended up being a full-time snowboarder, so they wouldn't let me do like the Mount Hood camps in the summer and things like that. So that I was a big into that. Surfing, growing up in Southern California, my brother was a surfer, so I spent a lot of time in the ocean. Pretty much every morning before school, getting up, get out in the ocean, and then go to school, which was really cool. I still have that love, but yeah, all the sports, track and field. That was like another. I was a big high jumper in the 200 meters, and track. But that's why I encourage so many kids. I'm like, do it all, because then you don't know. Like you don't know, and they all helped me in my other sports. It's the perfect kind of cross training. I tell people. My explosiveness for my legs as a power hitter came from basketball. Like I remember the feeling of just wanting to get up for rebounds and having to utilize those muscles to really find power, especially being a shorter forward. And I remember when that clicked for me as a hitter, it was like, oh, those muscles. And I became from a slapper that's just trying to put the ball in play to hitting home runs because of that cross training and playing other sports.
Was it hard for you when you got to college to focus just on softball? Because it sounds like you did 10,000 different type activities, which is amazing. Was it hard because college, it's all business? I mean, and you had to focus on it. Was it hard for you to kind of settle in on that one sport?
Yeah, so Brad, like 2 weeks into my freshman year at Stanford, and God bless my head coach at Stanford, because I was also a 17-year-old freshman. Not that that gives you an excuse, but you're already an idiot as a freshman. I was like even more so, like just should no business being in college yet, 17. But my dorm, like our freshman dorm, like head of like person, the RA that ran the whole dorm, was actually the rugby team captain. For the men's rugby team. And when he found out I was a softball player, and you know, I was always running the halls, like already just like tackling people. And he was like, you need to come out for the rugby team. And I was like, totally. So I tried out for the rugby team.
Wow.
My freshman year. And you know, fall, like we had softball practice, but you're not like full, like I didn't know anything yet. We were still, I think, doing like individuals, like you're going out hitting and lifting, but it wasn't like, so I was like, oh, this is perfect. I can do rugby in the fall. Didn't bother to let my coach know. Wow. And then I made the
team. I was gonna say, I can't imagine he was happy.
Oh my gosh. And it was like one of those, like, where he was looking at me like, are you for real? Like, did you really? Like, I want to kill you right now, but I'm also like, did you really think that you're on a full scholarship to play softball and you're going to play that sport? And I just remember being an idiot at the end of all of that, like him being like literally ready to strangle me. And I'm like, so do I have to quit the team? Like, I was like, so what's the one? Yeah.
Like, did you ever get to play a game? Did you ever get to play in a game at least?
No, I actually, a few practices. And the best part is like that I never told my coach, like it didn't even occur to me to like tell the coach that was paying for my entire education.
You're at the most expensive school. You're at the most expensive school in America on a full ride. And you're like, hey, I can play other sports. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
And rugby.
No, and I still snowboarded because we were like 2 hours from Tahoe. I can say all this now because you sign the contract where if you blow out, you're doing any other sports, you basically can't, but I couldn't stay away. And so I would go board every winter, just sneak up there. Even sometimes after practice, like we'd get done early and I would jump in my car and my board and just head up to Tahoe for, you know, if we had a day, and go snowboard all day. So less that I didn't, I was an idiot though. I mean, I'm hoping we all were, but I definitely was.
Jessica, one of the things that we're like to talk a lot about is the mental side of sports. And, you know, you've been on a bunch of big stages and have had to learn to deal with pressure. Did that come easy to you? Can you just talk about your mental game and how you developed that? Maybe if there were some struggles, if there weren't, you know, just can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, no, that is number one for me, is, and I think more so now than ever. is the mental health of our athletes and something that isn't practiced. We talk about all the training that we do for the physical side of the sport, and shoot, we've got something for everything. But the mental health side is something that I feel like we still need. You know, college athletes, high school athletes, obviously professional athletes. But for me, like, that was my biggest jumping point, is what I talked about with like humility and insecurity that really like drove me to work harder, also kept me back. Because I doubted myself so much. Like, I always felt like I wasn't good enough, and I really struggled with that. And it wasn't until I was on the US team and I literally had a moment for it, where it was like, I was playing in the Dominican Republic, we're in the Pan American Games, and I'm batting third in the lineup, and we're a month away from the Olympic tryouts, the official, like, you know, okay, you've been on the national team 2.5 years, but we all know, like, it's all about that team, right?
The Olympics.
And
yeah.
I just kept thinking, you know, how am I on this team? I got Lisa Fernandez hitting after, like, I had Lisa Fernandez's autograph and her poster above my bed as a kid. Like, how am I on this team? And it was just this doubt, and like, I'm not good enough. How am I here? And I just remember, like, being in the batter's box, and literally I couldn't hit. And the competition and the Pan Am Games wasn't like great. Our biggest competition was Canada. So we're playing a lot of teams that are pretty much like giving us like batting practice type, you know, those kind of, we're beating them like 15-0. And I literally probably hit like .120 in that tournament. And it was all because the person I doubted was who I became. Like, all my doubts, everything, you're not good enough, you're not, all of a sudden that showed up on the field. And I even knew, I'm like, okay, I'm better than this. But I realized, shoot, like, all this negative self-talk, all of this, like, you know, that has gotten me to work hard to this point, but there's got to be a switch where you believe you're meant to be there. It's okay to have the humility to put in all the hay in the barn and all the stuff, right? But to be able to have that point where it's like, okay, but now I've earned this. And now, like, being able to stare down a pitcher and knowing that you're better, knowing that you were meant to be in that spot. And it was hard. Like, it took me the realization that it isn't a switch, that you have to work on it. And I feel like, especially as women, and I'm not trying to genderize this at all, but we're constantly doubting the way we look. You know, are you smart enough? Are you pretty enough? Are you this? Like, there's just this constant, like, battering of being that perfect person. And I had to realize that my self-talk needed to change, that I needed to every day wake up, look myself in the mirror, and see a strong, badass, kick-ass, you're gonna take on the world female. And that was that was a difference maker. That took me from a good softball player to one of the best. And it was all here. And it didn't happen overnight. I mean, I knew it in that tournament, and I still hit .120, because even though I knew I was better than that, I realized that I had done too much here to bring me down, and I needed to start to work on that as much as I was working on everything else.
Did you, in that moment, did you have your parents or a coach or another girl on the team kind of help you realize that and help you along the way?
Yeah, my coaches and parents, everyone was always so positive and like, Jess, you're better than this. I remember my Olympic coach was always like, I wrote you third in this lineup because I believe in you. Like, yeah, you know, you need to believe in yourself. But honestly, Frenchie, like, it had to be me. Like, I was always surrounded with supporters, but if my own self-talk isn't positive and I don't believe I'm good enough, it doesn't matter what anyone says, you know? I mean, I was on the team. I had accomplished so much already, but I still doubted if I deserved to even wear that uniform. And that was something that had to change. It had to come from within. And honestly, I think we depend too much on other people's, more so even now, social media, like, how many likes, what are my comments? Like, it's got to be what you believe in yourself, as cheesy as that sounds. But like, until you can wake up every day and understand the person that you are and who you want to be and put out there, it doesn't matter what anyone else says. And that's something I had to learn. As much as I had a great support system, they weren't going to do anything for me if I didn't believe it.
So, Jessica, to make that transition mentally, I mean, was that just a decision and then a discipline for you every day to to set aside time to do the self-talk that you needed?
Yeah. And you know what's crazy, Britt, is I still find myself needing that now, like being in television and, you know, working in, you know, Major League Baseball. Is it's interesting. I've tapped back into that of like really understanding. It's not even just like, you know, okay, you're great, you're awesome, like rah, rah. It's not even so much that. It's understanding, okay, honestly, like as a softball player, why am I good? Why am I here? Like, what are the skills? What are the, like, really diving deep to understand what's at the core of me and like what makes me good, so that it's not just you're awesome, like here we go, you know. That, at least for me, doesn't work. It's got to be a true understanding and knowledge of what makes me great. And that's what I would tap into when I be in, like, literally at the Olympics playing Japan and Yukiko Ueno's throwing freaking gas is coming at me. You step out of the batter's box and you tap into this place that you've fed now for so long, that's like a deep understanding of like, Chess, you've got quick hands. Like, you can get to this like crazy velocity that she's trying to jam you up on inside. And like, it was that specific for me. Really, when I was practicing my mental health and what made me great, and this is overall as a person, I'm talking softball right now, but it was everything. It wasn't just things like you're beautiful, you're smart, you're strong. It was going deeper into like, what makes you strong? What makes you a good hitter? What makes you a smart person? What makes you a good daughter and friend? And like really understanding. So when I'm needing it, it's specifics and it's not just some cheer.
And that's just such great advice for the kids to hear. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
You just mentioned the Olympics, and I'm curious, can you just tell us, you know, what was that like? What were the best moments of the Olympic experience for you?
Oh my gosh. Honestly, for me, this is going to sound funny, but the number one, like living in the village and the dining hall, because I know it sounds food, but I'm such a like people person, and I love traveling. And what's so cool is you have 10,000 athletes in the Olympic Village. You have more countries represented than the United Nations. And, you know, in 2004, you know, we had just declared war with Iraq. There was all this stuff happening. And, you know, I'm graduating from Stanford. I would go, and I love my team, but we had lived with them for a year. And I would go sit every meal with other countries. And I remember sitting down with the Iraqi soccer team. Like, I would never have been able to fly to Iraq at the time, have a conversation. And I remember, like, they didn't speak English, so I had this Egyptian high jumper that came over and, like, helped. And, like, we had meals. And then I went back to their part of the village, and we hung out. And we were talking about, like, yes, like, what our countries and what was happening, but really, like, who we were as people. And, you know, the Olympics, I know it comes across as like the one place where you can have like peace and have these, you know, conversations that like we wish that through sport, you know, politics could do the same thing. And you really feel that, at least for me. Like, I'm not someone to stay in my own little bubble. Like, I really wanted to understand everyone that was there around me and visit everybody. And when I say that, and then you go and compete, and now you do, you've got USA across your chest. It gives it so much more meaning. My understanding of what it's like to grow up in our country, to have our flag and our rights and the things that we are able to have growing up here. And then you hear your national anthem, which how many times have you heard the national anthem at that point in your life? Like a million, right? And it means something that it just hits you. At least it hit me. I'm not a super like emotional, like crying person, but when we won gold and our national anthem was playing, oh my gosh, I lost it. And it was everything
leading up to
that. Yeah. It was special. Doesn't even begin to describe it. It was literally, if I were to pick the one beyond like kids and family, the biggest moment of my life, it's Olympic gold, because of the pride you have for your country combined with your sport and everything that you've put into that point.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah. You know, I just switching gears a little bit, that was amazing. You know, give me an experience, if you don't mind, for the parents listening, for young athletes listening, you know, what was one of the best coaches you've ever had? You don't have to say their name, because I also want one. What was one of the worst coaches you ever had, and why?
Oh, yeah. Obviously, so many good ones. You know, my dad, my Olympic coach, who I'm leaving actually next week to go to Italy with, and we're going to go teach softball and baseball over in Europe next week. Him and I do that a bunch, and he's helped me. What made him so great to me is, and I tell this to coaches all the time, is, you know, constructive criticism, you know, a phrase that we hear, but he would always build you up first before like coming out. And what I mean is like finding a specific thing, like, Jess, I really love what you're doing with your legs when you're hitting right now, but that front side has got to, like, we got to figure out.
Yeah.
And I do think, and I hate, again, like women to men, but that he came from baseball. And one of the things he always said is, like, women, you have to make feel good to play good. Men, they play good to feel good. Like, it's a reverse. Like, and that's something he noticed coming from men's sport to a women's sport, coaching men to women, is that, you know, it helps to be able to really, and not just, again, rah-rah, but find the thing that makes them great, remind them of that, then bring in all the things they need to do to work on. There's that shutdown moment. And I saw him, you know, you're a psychologist as a coach, him being able to understand. I mean, we had women on our team everywhere from 18 years old to 40. So, like, you know, and you get this, Frenchie, with all, you know, the ages that you've played with. When you get that one manager, that one coach that understands how to relate to each different psyche and bring out the best, that's a magic recipe. The bad ones are the ones that think, I don't know, to me, that it's like a cookie cutter, that, like, this is how I coach and I'm going to coach everyone the same way. And to be honest, they're so, like, just, like, disconnected from the human. Just remember, you're coaching little humans, whatever it is. These are human beings first, and understanding who they are. I get that you might be great at understanding how to hit, field, whatever. None of that matters if you can't figure out how that gets to the player. And that's to me the magic formula.
Jessica, you know, there's like I won't say epidemic, but of mental health issues in high school and college sports with athletes. I mean, coming from that world, do you have any ideas of what, in your own opinions of kind of what's causing that, and any suggestions on where we can go from here to make it a better environment for kids?
That to me has, like, been my everything. Like, I just finished a book, What Made Maddie Run, which I highly recommend. It's Kate Fagan, who actually works at ESPN, wrote and dove into this family, Madison Hollerin, who had committed suicide. She was a runner at Penn. And the book's been out for a few years, but honestly, like, I know in softball, we just had a suicide this last year. In college softball, you know, coming from Stanford, we had a women's soccer player this past year. It's more and more and more. And being that I'm in the business, I felt like, gosh, like, I had two teammates that were suicidal when I was at Stanford. You know, I never really understood. And now that's not good enough anymore. I want to know, answering those questions, why, how did we get here, what's going on, and how can we help? And so, you know, I finished reading that book, which really gave me great insight. I give so much credit to the Hollerin family for opening up, like, text messages, like, here was Madison's entire life, how she got there, not trying to hide anything, so that we can better understand what is making these male athletes struggle so much. And it's worse now, and we hear a lot, you know, about social media. That isn't the number one. There's so many other things that go into it, but it's definitely now fueling that fire that's already happening. The constant seeing, you know, your friends on TikTok are doing this, and everyone else is looking like this, or they're somewhere without you, and this constant, like, I have to, every day I wake up, and how can I show the world that I'm doing something really cool, or that I look a certain way? It's a pressure that's impossible. I don't care who you are. You could be the most famous person in the world, and you're not going to be able to keep up with that every day. Already added to the pressures that we have academically, athletically, all those things. So to answer your last question of how we can help is, we need professional help. And I sit on a board with the Knight Commission that is actually now, with all the NCAA rules and changes that are happening, making sure that it's now going to be more mandatory that if you're going to be a Division I school, you need to have on staff a psychologist for every single team. So that just how we had trainers, a trainer that was seasonal, right? You had your softball trainer that also maybe did field hockey and other sports. But that same person that's taping your ankles, you need to have someone on staff that's being able to work with the mental health of these players.
You know, that's strong. And it kind of leads me into my next question. You know, you've helped my 9-year-old daughter out with some mechanics and stuff that we've talked about. But, you know, so my daughter, she's watched a lot of film of you hitting, different things we've done, but you got a lot of young girls, young women who look up to you. What would be your advice to them as they navigate their journey in Little League and through high school?
That it's okay to stand out. I feel like there's a pressure to fit in, like to be like everyone else. And this goes for everybody, but I see it a lot with young girls. You know, you want to be like the cool kids. You want to be, you want to blend. And oh my gosh, is the beauty and the magic in standing out. Finding what makes you different, what makes you unique, what makes you special is what you should own and what you should put out there. And to be honest, it's going to attract the right friends and the right people. And it's such a hard lesson because I think it's an easy default to just say, okay, well, everyone's dressing like this or acting like this, I'll do that, you know, and you can be more robotic. But one day you're going to wake up and realize you're not who you want to be. And honestly, you're going to hinder the greatness that's inside of you. And that goes for athletics. Like, it's okay to be the person that wants to stay after practice and work. It's okay to be someone if you want to fist pump and be like, heck yes, because you're fired up about a great play. Like, be that person if that's who you are. But the more and the sooner that you can understand that standing out versus fitting in is where the magic happens, that is always my biggest advice. Because it took me time. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to blend. I remember 13 years old hearing Dot Richardson speak. And this is going into your Frenchie, like, out. I felt like she was huge. Such a big, big role model for me. But I heard her speak, and it was after the 96 Olympics, and I was with all my BFFs, my softball team, really trying hard at that point to fit in, do whatever it was cool. And then she took that stage and got up there and was talking about winning gold in the 96 games, and she's like, Dot Richardson steps up to the plate, hits the game-winning home run, and I'm just like, oh, you know, she's an orthopedic surgeon, Olympic gold medalist, like, I'm just like, yes. And her energy, I was like, oh my gosh. And I look around at these girls that I tried so hard to be like, and I'm looking at them like, gee, and they're like, is she wearing a scrunchie in her hair? They just immediately started like making fun of her. And I realized in that moment, I'm not like them. And that's okay. Like, I see wow. Someone that is speaking to me. And from that point on, I decided to own who I was and stop trying to be like everyone else.
Man,
that's great.
That's powerful. You know, my last question, I can see your little guys getting up and speaking of little guys, I know you have two boys of your own now. And what is one thing or two things that maybe your dad or mom taught you that you want to instill in your little guys?
What is one thing? Sorry.
No, that's not. Hey,
it's real life. Those moments.
Yeah, I was going to say these two old guys don't get those moments anymore. No, you know, now that you got two boys of your own, what's one or two things that your parents instilled in you that you're going to instill in your boys?
Gosh. I know for my dad's side of the family, you know, he comes from Mexico, huge, huge Mexican family. Family's always got your back. And, you know, I grew up with just a ton of it, like cousins and, you know, just there was a new family member every other day, you know. And I'm still in my kids. We just got back from, we went out to Summer Lake with all my siblings. So there's four of us, all our kids, you know, no spouses were invited. It was just siblings and their kids. And it was pure chaos. We were, you know, people were sleeping all over couches, whatever. And like, my biggest thing is just how important family is. And how it, as big as it can possibly be, that there's so many people that love you And it does take a village. You know, there's things that my sister will tell these guys that, like, I can tell them a million times and they just don't hear me. And when I say family, that can be friends. That can be, I mean, it's just people that love you and understand you. Find those people and try to bring them around as much as possible. Because we need it, you know, even at my age. Like, I think that I'm so tough and I'm in my 40s now and I've passed all that, you know, insecurity and that. It's not true. Like, there's still so many times that I've learned that I need to lean on people that truly understand me and know me. And it's okay. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to be like, hey, like, I could use some time right now. I could use some advice. You're never too old for that. And so that's something that I know I tried to talk to these guys about, especially as, you know, he's 9. So, like, you know, it's not like he's faced with all the world's problems, but it feels like it at times, you know? And then, yeah, I guess that to me is the biggest one that my family has instilled that I continue to do.
Well, I'll tell you what, I know both these guys would agree. Thank you for spending some time with us today. I know you're an amazing mother, an amazing athlete, but as a guy that broadcast games too, I love your work.
Yep,
and I know
definitely.
Most of the guys I know too respect and love your analysts of the game. Hey, buddy.
Good luck in the show.
Yeah, good luck, bud.
Good luck in the show.
You told them about Sound of Music. Yeah, no. Well, thank you so much. And honestly, Frenchie, we got to do a game together. That's got to be on our bucket list.
I know. I'd love to. It would be outstanding.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much. I'm glad.
Thanks,
we had
Jeff.
Thank you so
Bye,
much.
Bye, guys. We'll see y'all.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
Take care.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today for the Pure Athlete Podcast. To hear more, find us anywhere you stream podcasts, as well as on our website at www.pureathleteinc.com. See you next time.